The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off with a kind of a happy, sad article here. Private Hathaway comes home. Decades after he was killed in World War II, a soldier is reunited with his family. And there's a picture here, it's not exactly accurate. It shows a picture of a soldier, I believe it's probably, it might be Vietnam, but it could be World War II, too. Anyway, the picture that accompanies this is a photograph that is obviously Vietnam. Anyway, it was World War II. It was just another day in November 1944 when a 12-year-old Wilman Hathaway rode home on the school bus in Hinesburg, Vermont. Just another day, that is, until the driver shared with the children what he'd heard through the grapevine. Private Alwyn A. Hathaway, Wilma's older brother, was missing and presumed killed in action in Germany. Every eye on the bus swept toward Wilma, whose face turned rigid with shock. When the bus reached her stop, she leaped out and ran into her house where she saw the horror of affirmation in her mother's face. Lola Hathaway had received a telegram from the United States Army. Wilma dropped her books and ran out of the back door into the woods. As William Halleck, née Hathaway, recounted this long-ago memory from her daughter, Starlene Poulin's home in Williston, Vermont, where she lives, the 90-year-old widow did the same thing she had done 78 years earlier. She shook with sobs. Halleck described her brother as something of a daredevil who had a tendency to get into mischief. He was so tall. He used to walk me to school and taught me how to throw a fastball, which came in handy when I got mad, she recalls. Alwyn was a good brother. Alwyn was drafted in February 1942, as soon as he turned 18, Halleck says. My parents didn't want Hitler taking over, but they didn't want to give up their son, either. Mother and daughter agreed that Private Hathaway looked smart in his uniform, and Halleck says he had a serious girlfriend he met in England whom he intended to marry and bring home. But he never came home. The wages of war paid in blood, tears, and body bags. Loved ones in their prime, once bursting with bravado, are sent home in their flag-draped coffins. But what happens when Johnny is not marching home because he can't be found? When, as in the case of Private Hathaway, he's presumed dead, but there is no body. For nearly 78 years, Private Hathaway's family had been denied such closure. There was agreement about the battle that claimed him, and little doubt about the location where he met his end. But without a body, the rest was conjecture. A gravestone in Hinesburg Cemetery dedicated to Private Hathaway marked an empty plot waiting to be filled. Absent tangible evidence, the family mourned the loss and tried to move on, unaware that a little-known military agency called the Defense POW/MIA Accounting Agency, or DPAA, would be looking for Private Hathaway. In a sense, the DPAA can be thought as a cross between the world's largest missing persons bureau and a real-life CSI war created in 2015. The agency has its mission, the investigation, recovery, and identification of missing military personnel from World War II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, and Middle East conflicts. More than 700 military and civilian personnel work for the DPAA, doing the research and analysis required to identify the more than 81,500 service members still missing since the 1940s. We have all of those names, says DPAA spokesman Sean Everett. Our historians and analysts are trying to match those names with remains found in battle sites, plane wrecks, etc. Everett describes what are essentially archaeological excavations to recover these remains. Once the remains are secured, often recovered from battle sites and unmarked graves, they are sent to one of two DPAA laboratories, one in Hawaii, another in Nebraska, to undergo forensic anthropology, using DNA as well as dental and medical records and any historical information about the battles they can gather. Scientists try to put a name on the remains. Successful repatriation with cases number in the thousands, says Everett. Some cases are fairly straightforward. The crash of a military aircraft, for example, usually presents investigators with a relatively confined site and the possibility of a passenger manifest. Battlefields are larger, more fluid, and infinitely more complex. One of the DPAA's most challenging cases was the USS Oklahoma identification project. When the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941, 429 sailors and Marines died in the bombing of the Oklahoma on Battleship Row. Only a fraction of the crew were identified at the end of World War II. So DPAA set out to identify the hundreds who were buried as unknowns. As caskets were disinterred and opened, investigators were stunned to discover that there had been widespread commingling of remains. One casket was determined to hold 20 different individuals. By late 2021, when the project was declared completed, 361 service members had been identified from 394 sets of remains. Another early effort launched by the DPAA was the Hurtigan Forest Project, with the task of identifying the remains of 200 soldiers found on the battlefield. To date, they have succeeded with only 49 soldiers. The Battle of Hurtigan Forest was actually a series of battles that took place over 5 months, beginning on September 1944, just east of Germany's border with Belgium. Though the conflict is often overshadowed by what immediately followed, the Battle of the Bulge, it was the longest World War II battle fought on German soil, and one of the costliest. Estimated U.S. losses were more than 39,000 killed and wounded. Hurtigan Forest is a 70-square-mile woodland, an ambusher's dream, heavily sown with thousands of German S-mines, referred to in a soldier's jargon as Bouncing Betties, because when triggered, they're launched into the air and detonate above ground. The winter of 1944 was unusually cold and wet. Many combatants suffered frostbite. Company E of the Armored 109th Infantry Regiment was involved in the fighting, including 20-year-old Private Hathaway. It was after one blistering encounter with the Germans on November 6, 1944, that Private Hathaway was reported missing in action. In a letter to Private Hathaway's parents, Major General Edward F. Witzel, the acting adjutant general of the Army, wrote, "The record concerning your son says that he was a member of a reconnaissance patrol operating within the vicinity of Hurtigan, which is approximately 25 miles southeast of Aachen, Germany. The troops within this area were subjected to an intense enemy artillery barrage, and I regret to state that your son has neither been seen nor heard from since that time." Hampering the search for Private Hathaway and others were those Bouncing Betties. Even after the Germans surrendered, landmines still blanketed the area and had to be removed. A slow process that took a year and a half, his remains would eventually be recovered from a foxhole in the Hurtigan Forest in May 1946. But no one at the time knew whose remains they were, because no positive identification could be made. Other soldiers died in that foxhole, too. After a year and a half of exposure to the enemies, the bodies were badly decomposed, and the remains were indistinguishable from one another. For some unknown reason, not even his dog tags were recovered. Those remains could have belonged to any one of 15 missing soldiers. As a result, in December 1950, Private Hathaway's body was declared non-recoverable. The remains were buried with other unknowns at the Ardennes American Cemetery in Belgium. Some 70 years later, in 2017, a DPAA historian decided to take another look at those remains. Using advanced forensic techniques, researching where in the Hurtigan Forest troops were located, and ruling out other potential matches, he detected a strong association between those remains and Private Hathaway. The scientist still had to clear up some false leads before a positive ID could be made. For example, the rain poncho found in Private Hathaway kit belonged to a different soldier. Soldiers swapping items with their names on them was not uncommon, but it was a wrinkle that had to be accounted for, and it delayed identification. Ironically, it was an Army screw-up that provided a crucial clue. Because his first name had been misspelled when he was inducted, the operative wrote A-L-E-V-I-N, not the correct A-L-W-I-N. Private Hathaway carried his birth certificate till the day he died. Nearly 8 decades later, it was badly decomposed, but a remnant found in his uniform was readable. The DPA had a pretty good idea whose remains these were, but they needed certainty. They contacted the Hathaway family requesting a DNA sample. Poulin and her mother provided the conclusive evidence they needed. Private Hathaway had been found. Though the DPAA investigation, Halleck learned that her brother had been in a foxhole when shrapnel from a mortar round or a mine pierced his skull. Likely the pain was as brief as the flash. "She was very emotional," Poulin says of her mother upon hearing how her brother died. "She was almost at a loss for words. She just had tears. But they were good tears, in a way. You know that." To know that, Poulin says her mother had never completely given up on seeing her brother again. "I mean, you're pretty sure that they're gone, but you still hope that someday he'll show up. I know I did, and I never met him." Private Alwyn Hathaway's cemetery plot is no longer empty. under bright sunshine on Saturday, September 3rd, 2022, at 1 p.m. with full military honors. He was laid to rest in Hinesburg Village Cemetery beside his parents, William S. Nick Hathaway, who died in 1953, and Lola Mae Burrett Hathaway, who passed away in 1977. The ceremony drew veterans who wanted to pay their respects, as well as extended family. Halleck and Poland are both thankful that the long journey is over. My only wish, says Halleck, her voice breaking, is that my parents had lived to see this. Drama in real life. Nick Bostick was troubled, aimless, and one night everything changed. Into the flames. At first it was almost imperceptible, a faint orange light at the edge of his vision as Nick Bostick drove down the streets of Lafayette, Indiana. Bostick rolled past a two-story house before he could process what he was seeing. Then he slammed on the brakes. Oh, my God, he thought. That house is on fire. It hadn't been Bostick's best night, but it hadn't been his worst either. The 25-year-old, burly and 6'3", with a messy beard that often framed a puckish grin, was still figuring out how to make his way through a life that hadn't always been easy. Bostick had spent his childhood shuttling back and forth between his mom in Lafayette and his dad in Arkansas, with neither home providing the love and safety that he needed. If you'd ask his friends to describe him as a kid, Bostick says, they'd probably have said, a fool. He got into trouble, acted like an idiot, tried to use humor to make friends, but never quite got it right. As he got older, his troubles got more serious. Bostick began using methamphetamines. He lost friends to suicide. At times, his own life didn't feel worth living. But over the past few years, he had started to turn things around. He'd quit hard drugs. He had a girlfriend, Carol Lewis, who was working at a Papa John's making pizzas. If people around Lafayette had to describe him now, they might say he was a guy with a big heart who maybe didn't know exactly what to do with it. That night, July 11, 2022, Bostick had a petty scramble with Lewis, and he stormed out of their apartment, leaving his phone behind so she couldn't contact him. He filled up her car with gas and smoked some weed in an auto parts store parking lot. He liked to go there when he needed to be alone. He looked up at the stars and sat in silence for 15 minutes or so. Then he decided to head home. He was on the road back to the apartment just after midnight when he saw the house on fire. Bostick threw the car in reverse and whipped it into the driveway. Flames were climbing up the front porch, lapping at the home's walls. Hurrying out of the vehicle, he immediately regretted not having his phone. Hey, help! The house is on fire! He yelled into the night. A car drove past, and Bostick tried to flag it down to no avail. He ran around to the back door, sure it would be locked. To his amazement, it swung open. Without pausing to think about the danger, Bostick ran into the burning building. It was a date night for the Barretts, and a large family date night was important. The Barretts family was a lively bunch. They went to church on Sundays, and their five-bedroom, two-story house they rented was always full of yelling and laughter, with friends and family coming by for cookouts and sleepovers and volleyball games out back. That night, four of the six Barrett kids were at home with David, 39-year-old assistant principal at Tecumseh Junior High, and his wife, Tierra, went out to play darts down the street. Sionia, their 18-year-old daughter, was in charge. She was taking care of Kalia, her one-and-a-half-year-old sister. Shaylee, 13, was in the house with a friend, and Kalani, 6, was roaming from room to room looking for someone to fall asleep with. Kalani hated sleeping alone. The animated little girl was so curious and trusted that David had always worried she'd run off with a stranger. That night, she walked into Siona's bedroom on the ground floor, asking if she could climb into bed with her big sister. But Sionia wasn't feeling well, so she had to work in the morning. So she told her sister to go to her own room, that they could sleep together tomorrow. The next thing Sionia remembered was waking up what sounded like an explosion. Later, officials would find that the fire started on the porch and then caused a propane tank next to the grill to explode. But in the moment, Sionia knew only that there was smoke in her room. The living room next door was on fire, and she could feel the flames heat on her skin. Is this a dream, she thought? Then a horrifying realization. I have to get the kids. Sionia sprinted up the stairs, grabbed Kiela out of her crib, and hurried to the next door, where Sheila and her friend were sound asleep. Wake up! Wake up! She yelled. Then she got to Kalani's room. However, the bed was empty. The six-year-old was nowhere to be found. A horrible realization hit Sionia. Kalani sometimes liked to sleep in the living room. And the living room was on fire. The curtains were melting. That was just one of the surreal things Nick Bostick noted as he ran through the hallway of the burning house, peering into rooms that were in flames, searching to see if anyone was home. With the ground floor seeming clear, Bostick headed for the staircase. He had just started climbing when he looked up and saw four faces emerge from a room at the top of the stairs and peer down at him, their eyes wide. "Your house is on fire. You need to go," Bostick yells. The girls came pouring down the stairs, Bostick hurrying them along. They all rushed out into the fresh air where they huddled in a circle. "Is anybody else in there?" Bostick asked. "There's a baby in there," Siona screamed, referring to Kalani. But neither she nor any of the kids knew where the six-year-old was. Without hesitating, Bostick ran back inside. By now, the whole side of the house was in flame. The smell was foul and tense, like nothing he had ever encountered. Black smoke was gathering at the ceiling and billowing down toward him. The temperature was intense, a whoosh of pure heat that hit him like a physical object. Bostick went upstairs. Everything looked nearly normal, with no sign that a fire was raging so near. He searched under the bunk bed and in the closet. No kid. He searched the other upstairs bedrooms and listened intently, surprised he couldn't hear a single cry. Kehlani did not seem to be on the second floor, so Bostick prepared to head back down. But the smoke was thick now, black and opaque. A curtain of poison had climbed all the way to the top of the stairs. He lifted his T-shirt, doubling it up, trying to cover his mouth and nose. As he headed to the top of the stairs, he heard a cry from the dark smoke below. Excuse me, the pages are stuck together here. My apologies. Bostick stumbled down the stairs and into the blackness, choking on smoke. He was on a search and rescue mission, his ears alert as he tried his best to move toward the sound, an arm outstretched. Then suddenly Kalani was in front of him. Bostick quickly lifted the girl into his arms and looked for the door. But the smoke and heat, he was all turned around. He stumbled through the burning house, trying to find the exit. Where is the front door? Disoriented, the only thing he could see the haze were the lights leading upstairs, like lanterns in a fog. Bostick climbed back up. At the top, he tripped and fell. With the fire all around them, he thought, were goners. But he managed to pull himself up, Kiana still in his arms. Bostick remembered seeing a window on the side of the house where the fire hadn't reached, and that's where he hit it. He made it to the room and began tearing the curtains and blinds from the window. Kalana's ankle became tangled in the cord, so he slowed down. With the curtain and blinds were on the floor, Bostick, never loosening his grip on the little girl, punched the glass with his right hand. His fist bounced it off. For the next punch, he reached back with everything he had, his fist flashing through the window, cutting up his arm as a gust of glorious fresh air filled the room. Then he quickly knocked the shards out of the frame. As a flame advanced behind him, Bostick and Connie looked out the open space. Below, a strip of grass lay between the house and the next one's wooden fence. The girl peeled down. "I don't want to jump out the window," she said. He was thinking the exact same thing. But they had little choice. The flames were inching ever closer, and the heat was intensifying. Bostick took a few steps backward, then without letting himself think much about what awaited him, he ran forward and threw himself out the window. As he flew headlong through the air, holding Kalani tightly in one arm, he twisted and contorted his body so to land on the other shoulder, cushioning her fall. Then they hit the ground. Outside, the firefighters had arrived. They heard Siona and the rest of the kids away from the house, which was now engulfed in flames. 6-year-old female and 23-year-old male possibly inside, a firefighter called as they rushed to put on their equipment. Then Bostick came stumbling off from the side of the house, Kalani in his arms. "Take her," he yelled, the moment captured by the firefighter's body cameras. He handed over the girl, crying, but miraculously uninjured apart from a cut on her arm, before collapsing on the sidewalks, calling for oxygen. Gasping for air, the house crumbling behind him, he had only one thing on his mind. "Is the baby okay?" he asked. "Please tell me the baby's okay." The minutes, hours, and days that followed are a blur for Bostick. He remembers the paramedic pulling the tourniquet tight around the arm he cut, punching through the window. He remembers being wheeled into the ambulance, but he doesn't remember being transferred to the hospital, where he was treated with smoke inhalation and first-degree burns to his ankle, legs, and arms. And there's a picture of him. Here's a good-looking young man with a beard, big guy, and then there's a picture of him also of the family, of all the kids and their mother and father, and there's also a picture here of the fire in the background and him carrying the little girl around the corner of the house, and he's got her tight in his arms, and of course the house is charred. When Bostick woke up, it was with a tube down his throat and his girlfriend by his side. In bed, he thought about what had happened. He felt that he'd done what anything would have done in that situation. But outside the hospital, the story of Nick Bostick was already spreading. He was a hero. The pizza man who had run into a burning building not once, but twice. A few days later, Bostick had been released from the hospital. The Barretts invited him and Lewis to dinner at the house where they were staying. David wanted to thank the man who had saved his family in person. The moment David saw Bostick, he started crying. He walked up to me with his arms open and held me tightly and thanked me, says Bostick. All he could say was, thank you, thank you. That week, they asked Bostick to come to church with them, and then they had him back to dinner again and again. I feel like God used him as a tool, said David, and I feel like God is using me as a tool to help him as well. The Barretts are still pulling their lives together after losing everything they owned. The virus brought them even closer as a family, and closer to their community, which came together to shelter and feed them while they looked for a new home. Kalani, who emerged from the fire with nothing more than a minor cut on her arm, has become delirious with sense of fame and bravado. She thinks of herself as a hero, says David. The first thing she says when she meets someone is, I was in a fire and I jumped out a window. Bostick's burns have mostly healed, though he finds his eyes have been sensitive to light since the fire. The other changes have been far greater. Bostick and Lewis were expecting a child, and as news about his heroism spread, a GoFundMe account for his hospital has exploded, reaching $600,000, a life-changing amount of money. Bostick offered the Barrett family some of it and helped them get their lives back on track, but David was firm. That was Bostick's money. He should support his child and use that gift to spend time with his family. Then he induced the now 26-year-old to a financial advisor. When Bostick thinks about what happened, it somehow feels like both a near-death experience and a rebirth. Even though he was the one who ran into a burning building, it was as if he was the one who was rescued. I feel like a different person, like I got a second chance, he says. If in the past he'd sometimes felt like a fool, that wasn't how he saw himself now. Life hadn't been easy. He knew the future, too, would be difficult. But I'm starting to find my purpose, he says. For the first time, he's sure he'll figure it out. It's the little things. There are approximately 20 quadrillion ants on Earth. That's 20,000 million millions, or in numerical form, 20 with 15 zeros. Together, their mass is estimated to exceed that of all the worldwide birds and mammals combined. Before creating the private detective Sam Spade, Arthur Dashiell Hammett was himself a Pinkerton detective. The Sunday Long Read website recently ran a listicle Hammett wrote in 1923 for their magazine, The Smart Set, detailing some of the odd things he encountered on the job. A man whom I was shadowing went for a walk in the country for a walk on Sunday afternoon and lost his bearings completely. I had to direct him back to the city. I know an officer who, while looking for pickpockets at a racetrack, had his wallet stolen. And a chief of police once gave me a description of a man bleeding to the mole on his neck, but neglected to mention that he had only one arm. And with that, we're going to switch over to Consumer Reports. How to hear better now? Should you opt for a traditional hearing aid or one of the new over-the-counter devices, which are easier to buy and may be much more affordable? The expert advice here can help you decide. Have you held off on getting hearing aids because the process, multiple appointments for choosing and adjusting the device, stiff prices, often several thousand dollars, seem daunting? We've got good news. There's now a new category of hearing aids, and they're available over-the-counter. That means you no longer need to see a licensed hearing professional or have a prescription in order to purchase them. You can buy an OTC hearing aid at a store like Walgreens or Best Buy and even get one online. The price is right, too. The new to OTC hearing aids usually cost $200 to $1,000 a pair, while prescription aids can run from about $1,000 to more than $6,000 a pair. And OTC aids may be an option for up to 90% of people with hearing loss, those with mild to moderate problems. Hearing technology is merging with consumer technology and bringing a lot more options to traditional hearing aids, says Vina Montachia, Ph.D., Director of Audiology at UC Health University of Colorado Hospital. What's important, because studies show that hearing aids can improve the quality of life and stave off feelings of loneliness for those with hearing loss. The condition has also been linked to a greater likelihood of dementia, and recent evidence suggests that treating it with aids could potentially help reduce that risk. I hope so, because I wear them. But how do you know whether the OTC devices are right for you? Can they be as effective as prescription aids? and how can you choose a hearing aid without professional help? We're going to tell you how. The evolution of OTCs. While some hearing devices have long been sold online or by mail order without a prescription, they were loosely regulated, so there were few guardrails in place to ensure that they worked. But thanks to a 2017 law designed to make hearing aids more accessible and affordable, there is now a clear set of rules for OTC aids. These rules, which went into effect in the fall of 2022, require that hearing aids sold without prescription meet specific standards for safety and effectiveness, and they can't be sold to children. OTC aids must also comply with certain technical requirements, including restrictions on how much they can amplify sound, which is intended to protect users from hearing damage. These restrictions, however, also make OTC aids unsuitable for people with severe hearing loss. Signs include being unable to hear even spoken words, even in a quiet room, or trouble hearing loud music or power tools. That's why OTC aids are more specifically intended for people with self-perceived mild to moderate hearing loss. Signs include trouble hearing speech in noisy places, in groups, and during phone calls. RX aids versus OTC. OTC and prescription aids function in essentially the same way. Both pick up sounds with tiny microphones, amplify them, and transmit to your ear via a speaker. And they use similar technology to do this. Perhaps the most significant difference between OTC and traditional aids isn't the technology they use, but how you go about obtaining them, and in some cases, setting them up. With prescription hearing aids, you go to a healthcare provider, such as an audiologist, an otolaryngologist, or a licensed hearing aid specialist. Sorry about that. That's a mouthful. These providers test your hearing and evaluate your needs and help you decide on the hearing aid that might be best for you. They also program the device to select, so it's set up for your specific hearing issues. They also verify the profile and by a fitting and provide a follow-up adjustments as needed. With OTC hearing aids, there's no requirement to go to the provider or even have a hearing test before settling on a device, and any setup adjustments may largely be up to you. The right aid for you. Given the differences we noted above, if you're thinking about buying hearing aids, you'll want to carefully consider whether a prescription or OTC version is best. These steps can help. Rule out other problems. Hearing loss can sometimes be caused by issues such as infections, earwax buildup, or certain injuries. Hearing aids won't fix these problems, but other treatments may help. So it's important to have a doctor check your ears if you notice any of the following. Blood, pus, or fluid coming out of your ears, ear pain or discomfort, feelings of dizziness or vertigo, or sudden changes in your hearing. You can also use an online tool called the Consumer Ear Disease Risk Assessment to help you determine if such issues are at fault. Available at sites northwestern.edu/CEDRA. I'm sorry, let's run it again. Available at sites.northwestern.edu/CEDRA. Get your hearing tested. The gold standard for assessing your hearing is a test with a hearing aid provider, such as an audiologist, according to experts as we spoke with. This will give you a precise measure of your hearing loss, says Jessie-Lean Singh, Ph.D., a postdoctoral scholar at Northwestern University's Auditory Research Lab. And that's a key in helping determine if your hearing loss is too severe for OTC aids. Even with milder hearing loss, you may want professional help if you have a complex hearing needs. Say you work in a classroom full of kids with sounds all around, says Samadar, Ph.D., a professor in the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorder at Northwestern University. In-person hearing tests are usually covered by private medical insurance, and as of this year, Medicare will pay for general hearing evaluations without a doctor's referral. There are plenty of ways to assess your hearing at home, using your computer or smartphone. These include tone-based testing apps where audio tones are played with increasing volumes and digits in noise or speech in noise tests, where you try to identify spoken numbers or words while background noise plays. Mimi and Sonic Cloud are reliable iPhone apps for tone-based testing, according to experts with the Johns Hopkins Cochlear Center for Hearing and Public Health. The World Health Organization's hearing test app, Hear WHO, uses the digits in noise method, as does online screening offered by Best Buy. Consider your DIY comfort level. Vinya Manakaya at the University of Colorado Hospital recommends thinking through whether you're in a position to manage the selection set of OTCAs on your own. While some companies offer high levels of phone-based or online support, you still have to pick a device, figure out its setting, and in some cases, program it. You also need to learn how to put it on correctly and clean it, and to troubleshoot problems. When you buy prescription hearing aids, an audiologist, doctor, or licensed hearing aid dispenser helps you with all of those tasks. Choosing an OTC aid. If you decide that an OTC hearing aid may work for you, the following can help you narrow down your choice of how customizable is it? OCD hearing aids come with two types, self-fitting and preset. Self-fitting aids tend to be costlier, but they're subject to more FDA scrutiny than presets, which means you can feel more confident they've been proved to work. And self-fitting OTC aids are far more customizable. With a self-fitting hearing aid, you'll typically use a smartphone app during the initial setup to help you adjust the device to suit your specific hearing issues. In addition to determine the level of amplification needed, these apps can zero in on such factors as which frequency of sound you have the most trouble hearing. Because self-fitting hearing aids can be more finely tuned than preset ones, they'll probably offer you a greater chance of getting the best possible setup for your needs, says Nicholas Reed, assistant professor of audiology with John Hopkins Cochlear Center for Hearing and Public Health. But for some users, they may find the self-fitting process difficult, and self-fitting aids may not be accessible to everyone. Jabra's Enhance Plus self-fitting hearing aids work only with Apple devices, for example, so check before you buy. Preset OTC aids come with a number of set programs, each one for different levels of hearing loss in mild to moderate range. But these may be good enough for many users. A study published in the American Journal of Audiology in 2021 found that devices with preset fit the hearing needs of 68% of older adults with mild to moderate hearing loss. What shape works best for you? Like prescription hearing aids, OTC devices come in two basic shapes, in the ear or behind the ear. In-the-ear aids tend to be smaller, sometimes small enough to fit completely inside the ear canal. Behind-the-ear aids consist of connected pieces, a case that contains device hardware and sits behind the ear, and a receiver that sits in a canal or in an earbud. Does one shape work better than the other? I actually tend to think whatever hearing aid you want to wear and you will wear more and you like wearing should be the one you pick, says Laura Coco, audiologist, Ph.D., and assistant professor in the School of Speech, Language, and Hearing Sciences at San Diego State University. Maybe I need to see her about my speech today. Still, she knows that behind-the-ear styles tend to be slightly better at filtering out background noise. Smaller devices also tend to be a bit more difficult to manipulate and clean, and may also have less capacity for features like wireless audio streaming, says Angelia, an audiologist, Ph.D., and assistant professor of audiology at Lamar University in Beaumont, Texas. How good is the customer support? One of the advantages of buying hearing aids through an audiologist or other hearing professional is that you have an expert helping you figure out how to customize, use, and troubleshoot your hearing aid. That support may make a difference. In one study, people who got hearing aids either through an audiologist or OTC, reaped similar benefits, but those who saw an audiologist expressed more satisfaction with their hearing aids. It would be unfortunate if people who could benefit from an OTC hearing aid ended up not using them because of insufficient assistance, says Larry Humes, Ph.D., an author of that study and a distinguished professor emeritus of speech, language, and hearing sciences at Indiana University. Not because the device isn't good, it meets FDA guidelines, it's because good quality device, he says, but all extra support somebody needs in adjusting to hearing aids that normally could be provided through an audiologist isn't available. That's why it's critical to find out what support you'll have access to with the hearing aid you're buying, including what days and hours of support is available, how long it lasts, and what sorts of extra will be providing it. For example, while most companies have phone-based customer support, in some cases the people you reach when you call may not have any special expertise with hearing aids. Other companies will connect you to licensed hearing care professionals via phone or even at walk-in stores in your area. And what's the return policy? It takes time to get used to hearing aids and figure out whether they're really working for you or not. A return policy of at least a month should give you the opportunity to thoroughly try out your OTC hearing aid, but send it back if it's simply not helpful. helping you sufficiently. As you shop, compare different products, warranty periods, too. Try this quick test. The Hearing Handicap Inventory, developed by Barbara Weinstein, Ph.D., an audiologist who's a professor at the CUNY, that's the City University of New York, Graduate Center in New York City, helps assess auditory wellness and to the extent which a hearing loss affects people emotionally and socially. One reason it's useful, someone without measurable hearing loss may still struggle to hear in certain circumstances. Directions. Check yes, sometimes, or no for each question. Don't skip any of them. Then add up your score. If you score good or excellent, you may not need hearing aids. People who score fair and have ruled out the other possible causes of hearing loss are good candidates for OTC aids. If you score poor or very poor, it's worth seeking help from a hearing professional. 0 to 6 is good, 8 to 14 is fair, and 16 to 14 is poor or very poor. Does a hearing problem cause you to be embarrassed when meeting new people? Does a hearing problem cause you to feel frustrated when talking to members of your family? Do you have difficulty hearing when someone speaks in a whisper? Do you feel handicapped by a hearing problem? Does a hearing problem cause you difficulty when visiting friends, relatives, or neighbors? Does a hearing problem cause you to attend religious services less often than you would like? Does a hearing problem cause you to have arguments with family members? Does a hearing problem cause you difficulty with listening to TV or radio? If you feel that any difficulty with your hearing limits or hampers your personal social life, does a hearing problem cause you difficulty when in a restaurant with relatives and friends? And I'm going to run through those questions again because they're very valuable. So you kind of need to pay attention to this and answer them. And I'm saying this from a point that I have been wearing hearing aids for quite a few years. And let me tell you, the difference it makes in your life is just unbelievable. So even if you just have a partial hearing loss, it's still really good to do some sort of checking for it. Does a hearing problem cause you to be embarrassed when meeting new people? Does a hearing problem cause you to feel frustrated when talking to members of your family? Do you have difficult hearing when someone speaks in a whisper? Do you feel handicapped by a hearing problem? Does a hearing problem cause you difficulty when visiting friends, relatives, or neighbors? Does a hearing problem cause you to attend religious services less often than you would like? Does a hearing problem cause you to have arguments with family members? Does a hearing problem cause you difficulty when listening to TV or radio? Do you feel that any difficulty with your hearing limits and hampers your personal or social life? Does a hearing problem cause you difficulty when in a restaurant with relatives or friends? The four types of hearing helpers. Hearing aids are now divided into two key categories, prescription and over-the-counter. OTCs can be further divided into self-fitting and preset types. You may also come across devices known as personal sound amplification products, PSAPs, and hearables in retail stores and online. These aren't considered hearing aids, but could be helpful in some instances. Check this chart for the lowdown on each of these kinds of devices, and we'll run through these. OTCs, hearing aid options, the self-fitting, where to buy them, at a retail setting such as drugstores or electronic stores or online. Pros. Currently, self-fitting hearing aids must be cleared as both safe and effective by the Food and Drug Administration. Because they're far more customizable than preset OTC hearing aids, they may suit your specific hearing needs better. Self-fitting aids can be significantly less expensive than prescription hearing aids. They start at about $700 per device. Cons. While you'll probably be guided by an app to set up your aids, the self-fitting process might be challenging for some people, particularly those who are less technologically inclined. Preset. Where to buy them? In a retail setting such as a drugstore or electronic store or online. Pros. With prices starting at about $200 per device, some of these are less expensive than many of the self-fitting OTCs and prescription options. Because these types of aids usually come with just a handful of preset audio programs, they may also be easier to set up than self-fitting OTC hearing aids. Cons. The present audio programs may not match your hearing loss as closely as a prescription or self-fitting aid will, and these don't need to be cleared by the FDA for efficacy before being sold over the counter, though they must meet standards about minimum technical specs and maximum safe volume. Other options. Prescription hearing aids. Where to buy them? From medical professionals such as an audiologist or ENT or a licensed hearing aid dispenser. Pros. Those professionals vet hearing aids and help ensure quality and that the aids work properly for you. As part of the purchasing process, you also receive a professional hearing test and help selecting a hearing aid. And the hearing aid provider will provide your device so it treats your specific hearing problems. Follow-up adjustments are often included. Cons. Price. A pair can cost about $1,000 to $6,000 and is usually not covered or not fully covered by insurance. In addition, you have to go to the provider's office or a retail location for in-person appointments. And then there's the personal sound amplification products, PSAPs, or other hearables. Where to buy them? In a retail setting such as a drugstore, electronics store, or even online. Pros. Price. PSAPs can be found for less than $20. Other devices broadly known as hearables tend to have many functions, including some hearing aid-like features. For instance, with Apple's AirPods Pro earbuds, you can listen to music, reduce unwanted background noise, and amplify sounds you want to hear, like a lecture. The cons. PSAPs, which are meant to be used by people without hearing loss in order to amplify sound in situations like bird watching, aren't hearing aids and aren't subject to FDA rules about hearing aid safety and quality. Hearables aren't allowed to be marketed for hearing loss. 8 OTC brands on the market now. The first is Eargo. Models 5, 6, and 7. Preset or self-fitting. Rechargeable battery type. Return policy. 45 days if purchased from Eargo, 60 days if purchased from Best Buy. Customer service. Phone-based support, including hearing professionals. Price per pair. $1,950 for Eargo 5 to $2,650 for Eargo 6 and 7. Connected device. Pairs with an app for iOS or Android. Warranty period. 1 or 2 years. Go Hearing. Models. Go Light. Go Prime. By the way, these are in-ear. Preset or self-fitting. Preset. Go Light offers volume control only. Battery type is rechargeable. Return policy, 45 days if purchased from Go Hearing, 60 days if purchased from Best Buy. Customer service, phone-based support. Price per pair. Go Light, $199. Go Prime, $299. Connected device, none. Warranty period is a year. Hearing assist. Models, a wide array. Preset or self-fitting. Preset. Battery type, rechargeable and replaceable battery models. Return policy is 60 days. Customer service, phone-based support, optional setup call with a licensed hearing professional after purchase. Price per pair, $399 to $699. Connected device, some models pair with an app for iOS or Android. The warranty period is 1 year, and those kind of look like an EarPod from Apple with an extension coming out of it. And then the HP, which is very similar in shape. Models are Hearing Pro. Preset or self-fitting, it's self-fitting. The battery type is rechargeable. The return policy is 60 days. Customer service, phone-based support, including the option to speak with a licensed audiologist. The price per pair is $700. Connected device pairs with an app for iOS or Android, and the warranty period is 2 years. The Jabra, now this is an in-ear. Enhance Plus, preset or self-fitting, it's self-fitting. The battery type is rechargeable. Return policy, 45 days if purchased from Jabra, 60 days if purchased from Best Buy. Customer service, phone-based support service. Customers can also go to a certified Jabra Enhanced Center to help. To find one, go to jabra.com/hearing/enhancement-center-locator. Service fees may apply. Price per pair is $800. Connected device, pairs with an app for iOS only. Warranty period is 1 year. And this is behind the ear for Lexi. B1 powered by Bose, B2 powered by Bose and Lumen. Preset or self-fitting? Self-fitting. Battery type? B1 Lumen replaceable battery, B2 rechargeable. Return policy, 45 days if purchased from Lexi, 60 days if purchased from Best Buy. Customer service. Phone support and video call support via an app. Price per pair, the B1 is $750, the B2 is $1,000, and the Lumen is $700. Connected device pairs with an app for iOS or Android. The warranty period is 1 year. The Lucid, this is an it looks like a modified in-ear. It comes out partially out of the ear. Models are a wide array. Preset or self-fitting? Preset. Battery type, rechargeable and replaceable battery models. Return policy, 90 days if purchased from Lucid or Sam's Club, 60 days if purchased elsewhere. Customer service. Phone and video-based support with the licensed hearing professionals. You can also go to Lucid Hearing Center for an in-person support. Price per pair, $200 to $1,000. Connected device. Some models pair with an app for iOS or Android, and the warranty period is 1 year. And the final one in this list is Sony, which is an in-ear. Model CRE-C10 or CRE-E10. Preset or self-fitting, they're self-fitting. The battery top, the CRE-C10, is a replaceable battery. CRE-10 is rechargeable. Return policy is 45 days if purchased from Sony, 60 days if purchased from Best Buy. The customer service support via Sony. Price per pair, the CRE-C10, $1,000, the CRE-E10, $1,300. Connected device pairs with an app for iOS or Android, and the warranty period is 1 year. RX-8s, ratings and brands of retailers. Many prescription devices remain available for people with severe hearing loss or those with mild to moderate hearing loss who want an assistance of a professional when buying hearing aids. If you're in one of those groups, Consumer Reports survey-based range of hearing aid brands and retailers can help you figure out which products to look for and where you can get them. And we have a listing here of the different things, of the different rankings, and I'm going to run them down, but I'm not really going to go into detail because there's a lot of detail. They rank Philips types and Oticone and Phonak, all as the top three. I happen to have Phonak hearing aids, but they're prescription. Rexton, Benefon, Resound and Wildex and Unitron all scored 72s. Audibel, Lucid, Signia, and True Hearing scored 71s. Miracle-Ear and Starkey were 70, and Beltone was 69. And the different ratings they give on there are battery life, ease of changing or charging battery, ease of cleaning, durability, reliability, fit, comfort, value, sound clarity, one-on-one conversation pieces, and noisy places, and none of those get very good ratings for that. One-on-one conversations in quiet places, they all get top ratings. Talking in small groups, they get okay. Listening to the TV or radio, the top three get excellent ratings. Talking on a cell phone, the top two get excellent ratings. Talking on a landline phone, they all get average ratings. In a movie theater, player cons is average. In a windy environment, none of them do very well. But actually, I'm going to contradict that a little bit because I find the Phonak works pretty well, but I have a brand new pair I just got through the VA. Okay, the following is an interesting article because it's, are your non-stick pans safe to use? Our test of three pans to see whether they contain potentially harmful PFAS chemicals raised some concern. Here's how to shop for safer cookware. A quick guide to pans that don't stick. Manufacturers have a bunch of trademark names for their non-stick coatings, including Excalibur, Quantonium, Thermaloy, and Thermalon. The coatings basically fall into two categories. Those that contain PTFE, a.k.a. Teflon, and those that don't. There are also a few that aren't marketed as non-stick, but pretty much function that way. Natural patina. With time and seasoning, cast iron and carbon steel pans develop a fine non-stick patina. Some are even sold pre-seasoned. They last much longer than traditional non-stick pans when the patina wears, pre-seasoned with oil and then heat. Ceramic. An alternative to PTFE, ceramic coatings are made of silicon dioxide and other metal oxides. Materials derived from what is essentially beach sand. The dozen or so pans in our ratings with PTFE-free claims have a ceramic coating. PTFE. Teflon is the most recognized brand name for polyterephthalein or PTFE. It's a type of PFAS, a class of chemicals linked to multiple health concerns. Most of the non-stick frying pans in our rating have a PTFE coating. Enamel. Although not usually sold as non-stick, some, but not all, porcelain enamel pans keep food from sticking fairly well. The coating is a glossy, heavy-duty glass fused to metal, typically cast iron, that's also easy to clean. If you shopped for non-stick cookware recently, you may have noticed a label on your new frying pan indicating it's free of certain hazardous chemicals. Of most concern is a class of chemicals known as PFAS, which stands for per and polyfluoroalkali substances. They're called forever chemicals because many persist for months or even years in our bodies, and they break down very slowly, if ever, in the environment. Worse, growing research links them to a host of health problems, including thyroid disease, higher cholesterol levels, kidney and testicular cancer, ulcerative colitis, liver damage, and kidney disease. And they appear in many nonstick pots and pans because they are used to make a nonstick coating called PTFE, which you probably know better as Teflon. It's hard to get a clear idea of the safety of many custom substances your cookware may be coated with, especially once that cookware is old or scratched. But understanding which cans contain PFAS and which do not is a good place to start. To help unravel the confusion regarding PFAS in pots and pans, CR recently tested three non-stick frying pans recommended in our ratings at different prices. They were Our Place Always Pan and the Red Copper Pan, both of which have ceramic coatings, and are said to be free of PTFE, and Swiss Diamond Pan, which has a PTFE coating, and until recently carried a claim that it was free of a specific related compound known as PFOA. The red copper pan is no longer widely available. Why are they even showing it then? The two ceramic pans didn't contain any of the 96 PFAs our testers looked for. The Swiss Diamond PTFE-coated pan, on the other hand, had measured amounts of several of them, including PFOA. That compound, which has been studied more than most other related chemicals, has been clearly linked to health risks in humans. Because CR's tests and research show that even products made without PFOA may contain the compound because they're how they're manufactured, CR decided to no longer display PFOA-free in our ratings of nonstick cookware. Such claims might not be reliable for PTFE-coated products. Avoiding products made with PFAs, including pots and pans, may help protect your health and environment, says Eric Boring, Ph.D., a CR chemist who oversaw our testing. And our findings suggest that consumers who want to avoid PFAs in their nonstick cookware may want to discuss products that claim to be PTFE-free. He and other experts CR spoke with say that nonstick pans that are made with a ceramic coating and carry a PTFE-free claim, such as red copper and always pans, are far less likely to have forever chemicals. Of course, many uncoated pans, including those made with carbon steel or cast iron, are also unlikely to contain PFAs, though they might not prevent food from sticking quite as well or to be as easy to clean. Look for PFAs in frying pans. Measuring PFAs in pans isn't easy. First, a team of technicians at the lab uses a rotating tool to scrape coating off 30 of each of the three pans, generating enough material to run two tests on each. The coatings were then tested for 96 PFAS, far more than is typical. The Swiss Diamond Pan Problem. The PTFE-coated Swiss Diamond Pan had measurable levels of 16 of the 96 PFAs we were looking for. Our test found the average of 4 parts per billion of PFOA in the coating, even though the packages on the Swiss Diamond pan we brought said it was PFOA-free. Swiss Diamond has since removed this claim from its website. Levels of some other PFAs were far higher, leading to combined PFAs level of 639 parts per billion in one Swiss Diamond sample and 703 parts per billion in the other. Amar Alon, general manager of Swiss Brand USA, the distributor of Swiss Diamond products in the U.S., emphasized the safety and quality of the cookware. He challenged CR's results, saying that manufacturers use PFOA-free raw materials since 2017, and the high temperature used in the coating process remove any PFOA. He also suggested that the PFOA that CR found could have come from cross-contamination in the testing processes. What an excuse. However, CR took several precautions to prevent cross-contamination, such as testing all equipment and materials that came into contact with the samples for PFAs. We found no PFOA in those tests. Several outside experts who weren't involved in CR's testing but reviewed the results say they weren't surprised at CR's findings, even if PFOA isn't used in the manufacture of the pans. For one thing, PFOA could be created by a byproduct of other PFAs when the pan is cured, says William Ditchell, Ph.D., the Robert L. Lettinger Professor of Chemistry at Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois, who has published research on the ways to destroy PFAS. Igor Novoselov, Ph.D., who teaches mechanical engineering at the University of Washington in Seattle, has helped develop a reactor that can break down PFAs using superheated water, agrees. We see similar things, he says, of his lab's work. He also says the higher levels of other PFAs detected in CR's tests are even more concerning than PFOA levels we found. Graham Peasley, Ph.D., a professor of physics, chemistry, and biochemistry at the University of Notre Dame in Indiana, who studies PFAs, concurs. He offers another possible explanation. He says PFOA and other PFA compound could be trapped within layers of PTFE and not be destroyed during the curing process. The ceramic pan difference. CR didn't detect any of the 96 PFAs, and we look for in either of the two ceramic-coated pans, and the Always Pan and the Red Copper, both of which carry a PTF-free claim. It's theoretically possible that other PFAs could be present in the pans, given that thousands of such compounds exist. Most of the scientists and other experts CR consulted with said they were pleased but not surprised to see that we didn't detect any PFAs in those pans. That because such chemicals aren't needed to make nonstick ceramic cookware, says Lee Ferguson, Ph.D. in Environmental Analytical Chemistry, and was an associate professor of civic and environmental engineering at Duke University in Durham, North Carolina, right here. Anyway, we're going to have to stop there because we're just about out of time. I'll finish this up next week. Let's do a couple of Life in the United States before we close. I was running late for my flight, trying to get through security, when the agent asked me to remove my jacket. I whispered to my friend. That was covering up the coffee stain. The older woman behind me in line made it feel better about my sloppiness when she said, "Don't worry, honey. It's a coffee stain, dear. Your shirt's on inside out and backwards." File this SFA Gate headline under Did We Really Need to Ask? Hawaii mayor asked people to stop throwing marshmallows into the Mauna Loa lava. In an Italian deli, I came across three round cheeses hanging in a net bag. After squeezing them and finding them to be extremely hard, I asked the man behind the counter, "Hey, what kind of cheeses are these?" The man said something I didn't hear, so I repeated my question. He answered again, but I still couldn't make it out. I raised my voice and asked again what kind of cheese I was pinching. He raised his voice to match mine. "It's a bocce ball. Leave it alone." Just before our chemistry exam, my two friends bet on who would do it better. The one with the worst grade would owe the other 14 chicken sandwiches. "There's no way I lose this bet," said my best friend. "This test is heavy on math, and I always do well on math problems." My other friend countered, "Fine, double or nothing, 24 sandwiches. Guess who won the bet?" And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next week, and thank you so very much for listening. And we got about 30 seconds of music here, so hang in there.